Welcome to our Blue Papers podcast edition. Blue Papers are our version of white papers here at 4imprint. They cover a wide range of topics, all with an aim to help your organization succeed. This is episode number 154, Mining for Bitcoins. This episode is presented by 4imprint Incorporated customer service representative, Brandon Manthey.
Mining for Bitcoins. In 2010, a programmer in Jacksonville, Florida, convinced a pizza shop to give him two piping hot pizzas worth $30 for the 10,000 bitcoins he had mined on his computer. This is the fabled first-ever Bitcoin transaction. Today, those bitcoins are worth about $3.6 million, but at one point, they were worth $6 million. Welcome to the wild, wild world of Bitcoin. This headline-grabbing digital currency promises consumers total control over their money and low fees for businesses. But it polarizes supporters and detractors. Fans believe it allows people to buy anything without interference from third parties such as banks. Detractors, on the other hand, think Bitcoin is a house of cards that will collapse as soon as people realize that zeros and ones on a computer have no value. The reality may be somewhere in between. Bitcoin is unlikely to upend the world's financial networks, but it is having an impact, as companies look to adopt it and consumers seek opportunities to spend it. Here is what Bitcoin can offer companies. Reliable payments designed not to be reversible or fraudulent. Low, less than 1%, or no fees, since the customer pays for the transaction, and quick transfers. Bitcoin's security is based on well-understood cryptography used by the U.S. government. Its algorithms are as trustworthy as credit card transactions or any type of electronic bank transfer. So people who doubt the security of its transactions should have similar doubts about the security of any credit card transaction. The system protects against fraud by ensuring the whole network sees the transactions that have happened and that Bitcoins have moved. This is like the serial numbers being scanned every time money is spent, making it possible to trace money as it moves around, making it almost impossible to introduce counterfeit money. And accepting bitcoins can be as easy as downloading an app onto a computer or phone that provides a Bitcoin wallet that will take care of pretty much everything, including requesting and confirming payments, as well as converting bitcoins into dollars straight away. Customers are using bitcoins too, but the numbers are small. For example, about 3 customers a day are using bitcoins to pay for their sandwiches at a Subway location in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And in its first week accepting bitcoins, CheapAir.com made sales worth $6,800. Reno, Nevada barber Josh Arias also accepts bitcoins and would like to see customers adopting it as he does not have to pay the merchant fees incurred when customers swipe their credit cards. Before we go any further, let's just say it. Bitcoin is weird. This is a payment network based on an imaginary currency. And most people, when they first hear about Bitcoin, say the same thing. No, this cannot possibly work. But to date, it is defying the doubters, which is why we should all be paying attention to the rise of cryptocurrencies. So how does it work? Put simply, Bitcoin is electronic money. Nothing more than bits in a computer or smartphone. First, let's just say that electronic money is not money stored electronically. Whereas services like Google Wallet stores credit cards, debit cards, and loyalty cards, Bitcoin is different. It reimagines what money is. Anyone can receive it and spend it by simply transferring Bitcoins between one another. Bitcoin is really more like cash than credit cards. Like cash, people either have Bitcoins or they don't. And if they have bitcoins, they are handed over to the businesses there and then without any third-party involvement. There is no bank or other middleman. The Bitcoin network is a bit like a BitTorrent peer-to-peer network, which is created when two or more computers connect and share resources directly without going through a separate server computer. These networks are best known for helping people share such files as films, games, and music over the internet. In Bitcoin's case, however, instead of music or movies, the computers share a digital ledger or a transaction database known as a blockchain with every computer on the network. And this ledger is automatically updated anytime someone spends Bitcoins. This ledger contains details of every single Bitcoin transaction there has ever been. This provides Bitcoin's transparency. Every transaction is visible to everyone in the network. Now, before we get bogged down in privacy concerns, let's just say that transactions appear as strings of numbers and letters that are not associated with anyone's real-world identity. The transactions in this ledger are not confirmed by banks or any other third party. They are confirmed using complex math problems or algorithms. Bitcoin users are trusting math, not people, to verify transactions. Whoever solves these problems through a process known as mining verifies the Bitcoin network's transactions and wins new Bitcoins for their trouble. So people literally are mining for Bitcoins. And it is the limited supply of this currency, combined with the high demand for it, that is the secret of its value, and indeed the value of more traditional currencies. So who is using the currency? In the U.S., the typical user is a tech-savvy male aged 25 to 40, earning above-average income and usually living on one of the coasts. In this podcast, we will discuss the history of Bitcoin, how it works, its pros and cons, and how companies can start accepting this digital currency. We will also run through how transactions work and the tax implications of accepting Bitcoins. Let's start at the beginning, which was Friday, October 31st, 2008, Halloween, appropriately enough. On that day, the mysterious Satoshi Nakamoto posted a message on the Cypherpunk's mailing list entitled Bitcoin P2P eCash Paper. His, hers, or theirs, no one knows. Message was simple. It said, I've been working on a new electronic cash system that's fully peer-to-peer with no trusted third party. He argued, what is needed is an electronic payment system based on cryptographic proof instead of trust, allowing any two willing parties to transact directly with each other without the need for a trusted third party. Cryptography involves the enciphering and deciphering of messages in secret code or cipher. Nakamoto wanted to create a math-based currency whose value couldn't be watered down by a central authority like the Federal Reserve. But the concept of a cryptocurrency predates Nakamoto and was actually first described in 1998 by YD on the Cypherpunk's mailing list. He suggested a new form of money could use cryptography to control its creation and transactions rather than a central authority. But it wasn't until after Nakamoto's paper that the first cryptocurrency came into being. And when Nakamoto left the project quietly in late 2010, without his or her identity ever being revealed, the Bitcoin community had taken up the challenge to create a new currency, and since then, it has grown exponentially. To appreciate why people would take up Nakamoto's challenge and help establish a digital currency, it is a good idea to look at the Cypherpunk community. Nakamoto launched his idea on a mailing list for this community. Cypherpunks advocate using cryptography to drive social and political change and put a lot of store on privacy and personal liberties. They were attracted to Nakamoto's idea that a network capable of processing tens of millions of transactions each day without the need to work through financial institutions would make it easier for people to make small, casual payments to one another. So it was politics that got Bitcoin up and running. However, the Bitcoin community has broadened beyond cypherpunks. It now speaks to a wider audience that sees its potential for reducing the costs and friction of global e-commerce and other commercial transactions. Nakamoto's idea was for a digital currency that would reside on a network of computers. This network would support a system that verifies transactions and mines for new Bitcoins, delivering new Bitcoins at a steady rate to help manage inflation. Bitcoins cannot be inflated by printing new money above and beyond the expected issuance rate. The name of the new system would be Bitcoin, spelled with a capital B. A lowercase b would be used for the units of currency, Bitcoins. Here's where Bitcoins get even weirder. The truth is, they don't exist, not even on a hard drive. So while all the talk is of Bitcoins, you cannot point to an account, like a bank account with dollars, which actually contains Bitcoins. Instead, what you see in a Bitcoin account or address are the records of transactions between different addresses with balances that increase and decrease. We will further explain transactions a little later, but here's a brief overview. Transactions are comprised of three elements. First, the input. This is the Bitcoin address or account that sent the Bitcoins to the account holder that is now looking to spend them. This provides evidence that the Bitcoin holder has the right to spend them. Second, the amount. This simply describes the amount of Bitcoins that are being spent. And finally, the output. This is the address to which the Bitcoins are now being sent. The recipient will then have the right to spend these Bitcoins. Every transaction that takes place is stored in the ledger or blockchain. Okay, let's return to talking about Bitcoins as if they were real. Only a few Bitcoins were made available initially, but the system was designed to slowly expand the currency to produce a total of 21 million Bitcoins. No more, no less. This number was completely random. It has no secret meaning. But that has not stopped a lot of speculation. It is worth noting that while the number of Bitcoins is set at 21 million, it is possible to divide each Bitcoin into 100 million pieces, known as satoshis. So the total number of currency units there will ever be is 2.1 trillion. Bear in mind that Bitcoin was viewed as an alternative way for people to make small payments to one another. It was never viewed as a replacement for existing systems, so a finite marketplace is not a major stumbling block for Bitcoin. Nakamoto estimated that the amount of Bitcoins produced would fall by half every 4 years, 10.5 million by 2013, another 5.25 million by 2018, and 2.625 million by 2023, and so on, until the last Bitcoin is mined sometime around 2140, if the currency survives that long. As of October 2014, there were 13.38 million Bitcoins in circulation, valued at around $5.06 billion, but the market is volatile. So where is the value in these non-existent currencies? Bitcoin is designed so people can subjectively value the currency, which is happening because individuals are freely exchanging products and services for Bitcoins. It is also possible to think about the value of the network like a phone network rather than of individual Bitcoins. Phones only have value because they're connected to a network. Without a network, phones are useless. Bitcoins are similar. Their value comes from the global network of merchants, exchanges, wallets, and so on that accept them as currency. Just like the phone is needed to transmit voice, text, and multimedia messages, Bitcoins are needed to transmit electronic information through the network. Ultimately, though, the value is determined by supply and demand. In other words, what people are prepared to give in exchange for Bitcoins. And the number of businesses prepared to trade for Bitcoins is growing. According to Bitcoin Pulse, there are more than 5,500 businesses now accepting Bitcoins, and that number is growing at around 5.14% per month. Okay, so let's start to get our heads around Bitcoin. Deep down in the pit of the mine, at its core, Bitcoin is a digital file with a list of accounts and balances. Think of it as a typical business ledger, called a blockchain, in the Bitcoin world. A copy of this ledger is stored on every computer in the Bitcoin network. When someone spends Bitcoins, the transaction is broadcast across the network. So every copy of the ledger is updated, indicating which account is going down and by how much, and which account now has a higher value. Computers update their copy of the ledger and pass along the transaction to other computers, which then pass it on until every copy of the ledger has been updated. At the end of the day, just like business ledgers, the Bitcoin ledger has to reconcile to zero. This and some math-based security is all there really is to Bitcoin. A system that lets a network of computers maintain a ledger and in doing so lets people spend electronic cash. The beauty of the ledger is that it means for the first time two parties can exchange value online without a third-party intermediary, such as MasterCard, PayPal, or Visa, who maintain the ledger in traditional online transactions. This third party was needed because online transactions involve exchanging digital files, which are pretty much like Word documents or image files. Copies of these files remain on the sender's computer when he or she sends them to someone else. There is nothing to stop the sender from sending the file to someone else. The same would apply when spending money using digital files. This is why third parties have been needed, to ensure the same money is not spent more than once. This is known as the double spending problem, successfully spending the same money more than once. And this is what Bitcoin math solves with its ledger. Bitcoin has come up with an ingenious way of verifying transactions using the crowd, basically users. The process is called mining. Now, this mining doesn't involve any hard hats, headlamps, or long periods underground chipping away at rock or dirt. But like mining, it requires expertise in knowing where the valuable seam of gold is and what specialist tools are required to get access to that seam in a profitable way. With mining for gold, there was a time when panhandlers could get rich quick in a gold rush. But now, the major conglomerates dominate the mining business. Bitcoin has a similar story. There was a time when anyone could use their home computers to mine for bitcoins. But now the competition has become so tough that there are large businesses with rooms full of specialized machines that exclusively mine for bitcoins. Think of something like a giant crossword puzzle, or a game of Sudoku, when you consider Bitcoin mining. And instead of miners chipping away at rock, think of complex computers computing away with one thing in mind, solving that puzzle or game. This explains why, even though receiving a payment is almost instant with Bitcoin, there is a 10-minute delay on average before the network confirms the transaction. This delay is needed to solve the puzzle, let every miner know the puzzle has been solved, and update every copy of the ledger with the new solution. A confirmation means there is a network consensus that the Bitcoins you have received have not been sent to anyone else and are considered your property. Mining is Bitcoin's clearinghouse, but it uses complex algorithms or math rather than a bank to balance accounts. Everything depends on math, and that is why complete strangers are prepared to trust Bitcoins. The math means they don't have to trust people. To ensure puzzles are solved on time, every 10 minutes or so, Bitcoin does something really simple, in theory, not in practice. It adjusts the difficulty of the puzzle, making it easier or harder as required. Okay, so why every 10 minutes? This number is actually a compromise between the first confirmation time and the amount of work wasted by miners who were not the first to solve the puzzle. After a block is mined, it takes time for the losing miners to learn about it. Until they do, they are still competing to solve the problem. So 10 minutes helps get the word out that the problem has been solved, and the miners should stop what they are doing on that puzzle and should update their copy of the ledger. It was also felt that shortening the confirmation time to, say, 5 minutes would not provide that great a benefit to companies accepting bitcoins. Weighing the needs of miners and companies using bitcoins led to a compromise number of 10 minutes to verify transactions. As for changing the difficulty of the problem, if you were chipping away at a rock down a mine, it's like someone giving you a pickaxe or a jackhammer, depending upon how fast they want you to work. In reality, what this means is there is a sort of mining gold rush, with ever more computing power needed to solve Bitcoin formulas. So mining verifies transactions, but it has another role, introducing new Bitcoins. The first miners to solve the puzzle are rewarded with new Bitcoins, 25 Bitcoins, or about $8,640. But that number will fall over time as the system works to control the number of Bitcoins on the market. That is where the motivation comes from for miners to monitor transactions on the site. When production stops after 21 million Bitcoins hit the market, miners will most likely be supported by small transaction fees. That's pretty much how Bitcoin works. But what benefits can companies expect for adopting this cryptocurrency? Well, there are several. Number one, easy payments. Users can send and receive any amount of money instantly, anywhere in the world, at any time. Number two, low fees. Bitcoin payments involve little or no fees today, but users can include fees to have transactions confirmed faster than the standard 10 minutes. Number three, secure transactions. Bitcoin transactions are secure, irreversible, and do not require personal details. Number four, no need for PCI compliance. PCI is the security standard for processing credit card transactions on the web. Number five, new markets. Businesses can enter new markets where credit cards may not be available. This can help keep fees and administrative costs lower. Number six, no need to join a credit card merchant network. Businesses can simply download an app and start accepting Bitcoins. Number seven, identity protection. Payments can be made without personal information tied to the transaction, providing protection against identity theft. Number 8, transparency. All Bitcoin transactions are visible to everyone in the network. And last but not least, number 9, getting started is easy. Businesses can get started by downloading an app that will accept payments and convert Bitcoins into dollars immediately. Companies still interested in exploring Bitcoin now have a decision to make. How much control do they want? Most businesses will just want to accept Bitcoin payments and have them converted into dollars straight away. But let's quickly review the options. Number 1, full client. Companies that want to handle Bitcoin transactions on their own with no help can opt for a full client service. This stores the Bitcoin ledger, manages wallets, and conducts transactions directly on the Bitcoin network. Think of a standalone email server in a cool corner office. Number 2, lightweight client. This is a middle option. The client stores the wallet but relies on third parties to access the Bitcoin transactions and network. This is similar to an email client that connects to a mail server for access to a mailbox, such as Microsoft Outlook, in that it relies on a third party for interactions with the network. And number 3, web client. This is like Gmail. The client is accessed through a web browser and stores the wallet on a server owned by a third party. The reality is that for most companies and consumers, Bitcoin will rarely be more than a mobile app or computer program that provides a personal Bitcoin wallet that allows users to send and receive Bitcoins. Let's run through how this would work in practice with a Bitcoin newbie, hypothetical Alice. The first thing Alice needs to do is to get a wallet from a hosted service, such as a blockchain.info. Alice could also access Bitcoin apps through the iPhone and Android app stores. The wallet software holds the addresses and manages the keys that are needed to complete Bitcoin transactions. Addresses are critical for transactions. Like an email address, Alice can share her address and anyone can use it to send her Bitcoins. A Bitcoin address looks like a lengthy series of letters and numbers. But a QR code containing these address details is also usually available on the digital wallet. It is also possible to create a new address for every transaction. This provides transparency about every transaction. Once hypothetical Alice has set up a wallet, she faces the challenge of getting her first Bitcoins. There are exchanges that buy and sell Bitcoins for local currencies, Bitstamp, for example, but it can take a number of days to set up these accounts, and they require various forms of identification. Other ways Alice may get her first Bitcoins are from a friend who has some, from local services that sell Bitcoins for cash, which can be found at localbitcoins.com, or by selling something for Bitcoins. But let's assume a friend, Bob, is giving Alice some Bitcoins. Bob opens his Bitcoin digital wallet, selects, sends coins, and provides the destination address, Alice's, and how much he wants to deliver. Bob can type in the destination address or scan the QR code with the address information on Alice's phone. Now the transaction will initially appear in Alice's wallet as unconfirmed, as it still needs to be confirmed by a miner. Once that has happened, Alice is free to spend the money. So let's say Alice decides to buy lunch in a cafe that accepts Bitcoins. The prices at the cafe are listed in dollars and Bitcoin. The cafe could have point-of-sale hardware, such as CoinKite's Bitcoin terminals, to automatically convert the price into Bitcoins at the market rate and display a QR code containing a payment request. Alice can now use her phone to scan the barcode, which will show the payment request in her Bitcoin wallet. She then just needs to hit send to authorize the payment. Finally, in about the same time as a credit card authorization, the transaction will be visible on the register. And that's it. The transaction is complete. So, for business, there really isn't a lot of difference between accepting Bitcoins and accepting credit cards. But there is a lot going on behind the scene. Let's jump into Bitcoin privacy. Using the hypothetical Bob and Alice example, their identities have never been revealed in the Bitcoin ecosystem. They are completely anonymous. They are known under pseudonyms called public keys. These keys are generated using addresses and private keys known only to the owner. Public keys are a string of letters and numbers that do not need to have any relationship to Bob and Alice's real-world identities. Anyone who knows the address can deposit bitcoins into it. It's as simple as Bob hitting the send button. But only those with the right permissions can move bitcoins out of an account. This means access to the private key, another series of letters and numbers. So the final step for Bob and Alice is for Bob to use his private key to confirm he has the right to send bitcoins from his wallet to Alice's. And that's why it is so important to keep your private key safe. Anyone with access to it can move funds. This is one of the weaknesses of the web-based services that most people use when using bitcoins. These web services store the keys and the bitcoins. If they are compromised, hackers can access the bitcoins and move them across the internet in a fraction of a second. But to summarize, to send bitcoins to a friend, you need his or her public key, which is kind of like a routing number on a checking account, to know where to send it, and your private key to complete the deal. But even then, miners have to do their work before the money can be spent. The miners use the math associated with keys and addresses to check every transaction that happens on the network. If the math does not work, the transaction is rejected. If it works, the transaction is added to the Bitcoin ledger, and every copy of the ledger on the network is then updated. What about setting prices? Every business has some choices to make about their Bitcoin prices. Many apps will convert Bitcoins into dollars automatically at the time of the transaction. Merchant services like Bitcoin Pay, BitPay, Coinbase, and Paysius will do this automatically. Companies can also decide to do some trading in Bitcoins by not converting them into dollars and keeping the Bitcoins for investment purposes. Bitcoin value can fluctuate quite a bit, so this decision really depends on each company's attitude toward risk. You can track Bitcoin exchange rates at sites like BitcoinPrices.com. Pretty much every kind of business can start to accept Bitcoins: brick-and-mortar stores, e-commerce companies, and business-to-business organizations. Let's discuss in more detail. As with the previously mentioned cafe example, brick-and-mortar operations can have customers pay using hardware terminals, touchscreen apps, on their phones or tablets, or simple wallet addresses through QR codes. For example, merchants can have a QR code with an address embedded in a poster near a cash register. Customers can scan this QR code with their phones and pay. Or they can make it easier for the customer by using a dedicated app to generate the QR code with both the address and bill amount embedded. Merchants can also integrate custom hardware, such as CoinKite, XB Terminal, and Bitstrat, with existing registers and point-of-sale solutions. E-commerce websites can use Bitcoin Merchant Solution, which provides payment processing services to accept Bitcoins and have them automatically converted to dollars. This eliminates the need to manage Bitcoin prices based on the current exchange rate. E-commerce companies and any company with a website can also help customers by creating a landing page that provides them with the addresses needed to make a Bitcoin payment by typing in the invoice number. Customers can copy and paste an address generated by a form on the page. Services like BitPay also enable websites to embed Bitcoin invoices into their website using iframes, which is really just a small separate web page inside another web page. E-commerce companies can also use plugins or software components that add a specific feature to an existing software application. Many shopping cart interfaces accept Bitcoins, including WordPress, Shopify, Magento, WooCommerce, and Zencart. And invoices can then be emailed out with Bitcoin payment requests. Did you know Dell now accepts Bitcoins as payment online? After a consumer adds an item to a cart and chooses Bitcoin as their payment option, they are then sent to Coinbase.com to complete their purchase. At Coinbase, customers can choose to pay directly from their Bitcoin wallets by using the generated payment address or by scanning the QR codes with their smartphones. They can also log into a Coinbase account if they have one and send payment directly. Dell says it is accepting Bitcoins because transactions can be made easily from anywhere in the world and offer reduced payment processing costs. What about those that mail invoices to customers? Businesses who regularly mail out invoices to clients can mention they accept Bitcoins on their invoices near where they list other payment options, such as Visa or MasterCard. It is a good idea to include the Bitcoin price and the date by which the bill must be paid to avail of that price. This is important as the Bitcoin exchange rate for dollars can fluctuate quite a bit. For transparency, companies should create a new address for every invoice. Bitcoin addresses are cumbersome to type out as they comprise a mix of uppercase and lowercase letters. However, they should still be included on the invoice because it helps provide a paper trail. Using the Bitcoin addresses helps the customer prove payment through the Bitcoin Block Explorer, which keeps a record of every payment. Using each address just once removes any ambiguity for clients about who is making the payment. Tax compliance is a topic of concern for small businesses, but in many respects, Bitcoin transactions work very much like cash. According to the IRS, taxpayers who receive Bitcoins as payment for goods and services must, in computing gross income, include the fair market value of the virtual currency measured in U.S. dollars as of the date of the virtual currency was received. Now let's discuss the downside of Bitcoins. There are a number of disadvantages beyond the deflationary issue and threat of losing all Bitcoins in the way you can lose cash. Here are several disadvantages. Number one, Bitcoins are a deflationary currency. As the number of Bitcoins will max out at 21 million, the value of coins will rise after the limit is reached. This creates an incentive for holding on to Bitcoins until they rise in value rather than spending them today. This can put downward pressure on product prices to create an incentive to spend. This is one of the main criticisms of the theory behind Bitcoin. It encourages people not to spend money. Number two, the level of acceptance is low. While more businesses are accepting Bitcoins, the level of market acceptance is low and has to grow to benefit from network effects. Number three, the price fluctuates. The small market size of Bitcoins means that relatively small events, trades, or business activities can significantly affect the price. Bitcoin supporters argue that this volatility will ease when the market grows and matures. Number four, Bitcoins are in beta status. They remain incomplete. Security developments are still in process, and most Bitcoin businesses are so new they offer no insurance on transactions carried out using those services. Credit card companies, on the other hand, do offer insurance on transactions using their financial system. Number five, security. The key system for transactions is only secure as long as the private key is kept secret. Web-based apps store everything on a server. If that server is compromised, all the Bitcoins on that server can be lost. This is what happened with Japanese Bitcoin exchange Mt. Gox. Almost $500 million worth of Bitcoins were taken when hackers accessed the exchange's servers. There are two ways to store Bitcoins. A hot wallet involves storing public and private keys on a device that's connected to the web, which is like walking around with all your cash in your pocket. The second option is known as a cold wallet, which means that storing everything offline, on an external drive, for example. However, if you lose your drive or it stops working, you lose your Bitcoins. It is also possible to take a hybrid approach, storing most of your Bitcoins offline and then moving coins to your hot wallet as you need them. And number six, a new digital currency could replace Bitcoin. It is possible that a new digital currency could enter the marketplace and take the place of Bitcoin, reducing its value significantly. However, Bitcoin may now be too well established for it to be easily replaced. Bitcoin is a new cryptocurrency that holds real benefits for businesses and consumers, including more control over their money, low fees and quick transfers, and internationality. And companies can easily start accepting Bitcoins using apps on their phones or computers or using Bitcoin merchant solutions. There's a growing number of companies adopting this digital currency, including the previously mentioned examples of Subway and Dell. And there are consumers who want to use it. But the truth is that right now it's not a major source of new revenue. But Bitcoin may be heralding a new way for businesses and consumers to think about money. And in the next several years, it may develop into a niche electronic currency that serves as an alternative to other electronic payment processing platforms such as credit cards and PayPal. It is easy to set up, so it does not take much effort to give it a try. Accepting bitcoins may also give a company's public relations operation a shot in the arm, as there is a lot of local coverage for companies that adopt Bitcoin.
Thanks for listening to this podcast on mining for Bitcoins. As always, keep on the lookout for our next podcast, Personas, fictional profiles of your customers to assist in market segmentation. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to listen to others, please visit our website at 4imprint.com/bluepapers.